It is. Morning, afternoon, evening, wherever you are. And I realize that I'm probably lighting the fires of the conspiratorial people out there, and even some of the non-conspiratorial people. But I wonder if this has occurred to any of you, and I wonder if it's occurred to Roger. 9/11 was the worst terrorist act ever committed against the United States. I suppose you could go back and declare Pearl Harbor to be a terrorist act, but it was clearly an act of war, actually, as 9/11 was, really. But consider this. Perhaps if we had that vacuum cleaner Roger talks about, that dragnet of information that the president wants, prior to 9/11, maybe 9/11 would not have happened. We'll take that up with Roger in a moment. I understand that looking back, you know, vision and looking back to 9/11 from today is a very easy thing to do, and perhaps even a cheap shot, but I can't resist. Roger, if this blanket of information, this vacuum cleaner that you talk about, would have prevented 9/11, would you have been in favor of it then, Roger?
Well, if you look at the history of 9/11, they had the most important information right there. They knew that there were these Arab guys taking flying lessons, trying to fly aircraft, but not really being particularly interested in landing them or taking them off.
Well, we knew about all that afterward.
But these FBI agents that were notified by the flight school ended up exchanging paperwork with one another and getting nothing done with that piece of intelligence.
I am familiar with all that, but my point, Roger, my question was, if this blanket, this vacuum cleaner of information would have prevented 9/11, would it have been a reasonable use of power to do so?
Yeah, I don't think that that's the kind of intelligence that would have prevented this kind of thing. I think the on-the-ground personalized intelligence, like, hey, there's guys over here that are taking flying lessons, and they're way out of whack for the normal students that we have on that one-to-one. I don't think the electronic vacuum cleaning thing is going to be anywhere near as successful. And in general, if you look at the intelligence community saying, all this information about these weapons of destruction in Saddam Hussein's hands, and all of that ended up being inaccurate. There's a lot. I mean, you can give people, the community, these machines, but if they don't sift through the information in a meaningful manner, and they aren't organized enough to have their own internal communications working with that sifted information, then it's kind of a wasted effort. We've all given up our rights to of privacy, and for what? Because they don't.
Well, now you're making a different argument. You're saying that they're not. Would it be the right word? They're just not using the information that they're getting.
I think. Well, my point being is, I think they're going to get 99% of the information they're going to get is just going to be honest United States citizens that aren't doing anything other than normal day-to-day
stuff. That's absolutely correct, Roger. Boy, are you right on with that one. 99% certainly is going to be innocent U.S. citizens doing this or that that gets flagged. You're absolutely correct, Roger. It's that 1% that we're all worried about.
And I think the 1% is going to be a little shrewder than using the normal means of communication. You know, I know, have you seen some of the encoding that goes on in pictographs where I can send you encoded information in pictures?
No, but I can imagine it.
All right. Well, basically, one of the things that's got the NSA stumped and a lot of other people stumped is you can take pixels in a normal picture, which is thousands and thousands of them, and you can encrypt within that picture and thousands of pixels specific complex information messages that you can send from point A to point B, which when they scan, it'll be a JPEG or something like that when it gets scanned, then it's a question of, well, do you actually have the muscle and the amount of computers necessary to take all those thousands of pixels in a particular picture and start to try to decode them to see if there is some kind of encoded, encrypted message in them? You know, now you're really starting to push the limits of acres and acres of supercomputers. And I really have my doubts of whether the amount of pictures going across the internet, every one of them could be decoded for potential secret information. So if you're talking about that level of sophistication, that all this money, all this time, and all this, you know, all this heartbreak they were going through about the average person's rights is kind of a wasted effort to begin with.
Well, yeah, but Raj, if they had that level of sophistication, they wouldn't have been walking into flight schools, you know, just stating that they wanted to learn how to fly a plane and not land it. That doesn't sound like a gigantic level of sophistication to me.
Yeah, it doesn't, does it? And the fact that the intelligence community missed the boat. And then I love Condoleezza Rice coming on and saying, you know, we never thought about aircraft being flown into buildings, but yet there's this one author, his name slips my mind, but about 5 years before that, at the end of this one book, and I've got the book here somewhere, a Japanese terrorist flies his plane into the Capitol building. I forget which, but I can go look in the other room because I got the book there. But, you know, I mean...
Yeah, I'm sure somebody thought of it.
It was in a novel by the guy that writes all the action stuff, the military action stuff. You probably know his name off the top of your head.
Doesn't matter.
Right, but anyway,
I'm sure somebody thought of it. But
yeah.
My point is that obviously, with the scheme of that size, there were phone calls or there were emails or there was some kind of coordinating communication that went on prior to 9/11. And there is some reason to believe that if we had had the vacuum cleaner we're talking about right now, this objectionable vacuum cleaner you're talking about, it might have prevented 9/11.
It might have. But, you know, from a technical standpoint, and people walking into 7-Elevens and buying phones that they discard 2 days later, you know, I don't really give it much hope that they're ever really going to make headway from that kind of technical standpoint. I mean, they can data mine you and I together. They can data mine us and get accurate information about us because, you know, we're substantial individual citizens with all these accounts and credit cards and all the rest of this stuff, and we're all in there. But Abdul and his buddies that just hop into 7-Eleven and pick up a couple of cell phones and 3 days later throw them in the trash.
But if the content of one of those conversations tips them off to where something is going to happen or when it's going to happen or gives them some tidbit of information that leads them to stopping something that would kill perhaps hundreds of thousands or even millions of Americans, then it would have been worth it, right?
If it would have that end result, it would be worth it, I guess. But to me, you know, us throwing the Constitution out the window and throwing out probable cause and throwing out search warrants, all for this long shot that something is going to be heard. I mean, I really think that most of this is going to get stopped at the border. My view is you gotta secure the borders.
I don't argue with that. I think we should have secure borders as well. I have no problem with that.
That's where I think we're going to make headway. You can spend billions on supercomputers data mining, but I think all you're going to do is have monster surveillance.
No. Wait a minute, Roger. You said you were for secure borders, right?
Yes.
Okay. Well, one thing coming across the border is information, Roger. It's not just ships and airplanes. It's also one hell of a lot of information. And if I read this correctly, they wanted to listen to communications that were coming from outside the U.S. to the U.S. or the other way around.
I know, but the information is not going to blow up in New York City and cause millions of people to vaporize.
No, but it's part of border protection. It's electronic border protection, Roger.
Yeah, well, it sounds good.
Well, I mean, I just used your own phrase. You said border protection. Well, ships and cargo containers are not the only things coming across the border.
Well, I know, but to me, the real destructive materials are really what you need to stop. I mean, of course, you know, the interesting part about it is look at this guy Salvo that had a sniper rifle over there in Washington. Here's a guy that actually brought the whole economy to a screeching halt with two people with a sniper rifle that went out and shot people every couple of days, and nobody went out of their houses. They were able to halt the whole economy. So the interesting part of it is that sometimes you don't need a biological weapon or a bomb. You just need a sniper rifle and a couple of loony toonies, and you can take down the economy of a city. And just think what happens if you were to take, 20 or 30 cities and do them simultaneously.
Well, that is my point, Roger. 9/11, look what it did to the economy.
I know, but how much planning do you need? Two guys and a sniper rifle. Do you think there's going to be that much communication coming through the NSA if these guys decide to do that kind of thing, where it's nowhere near as sophisticated as flying airplanes, but it can certainly be, into buildings, but it can certainly be as devastating to an economy in an area.
Now, the other side of this, Roger, is that since 9/11, we have not had anything of that magnitude or greater happen yet. Mm-hmm. Now, when the CIA or NSA or any of the initial agencies do something right and they stop something, we normally don't hear about it, do we?
I don't know. I really don't know. We did in the case of England event that happened relating to them wanting to blow up
that's true.
Liners. So it seems to me that if they do these days, they're so desperate for some positive showing that all these billions spent. Mm-hmm. We haven't even talked about what's really happening with the economy. I mean, not only is the war consuming about $3 billion a day, but just think about what the costs are to secure America as we move billions and billions more into debt. The whole war is on borrowed money, and so is this beef up. So,
actually, I'm glad you mentioned the thing in England, Roger. Do you know how they got onto that offhand?
No, I don't.
You don't. I wonder if it could be some sort of electronic surveillance because, gee, they were going to blow up all kinds of airliners en route to the U.S. from Great Britain and perhaps other areas in Europe. That would have been really, really horrible, but they stopped it.
Yeah, they did, and they did it with wiretaps. I know they did have those locations tapped. The question was,
how about that?
The question was, is whether they got on to who they were through data mining, through this NSA flavor surveillance, or whether was it on the ground type intelligence that really got the main connection going to begin with. So,
well, you did say there was surveillance going on. So
I had read that they had all those locations wiretapped, but the question
is... So there you have it. Hundreds and hundreds, thousands perhaps, of Americans and others would have been blown to bits on their way across the Atlantic, but they stopped it.
Yeah, of course. But, of course, once again, did it come from data mining on a warrantless basis, or was there actually on-ground intelligence whereby they knew that these people were trained in some place where there was radicals and they've been following them anyway, and then they found their nest, so to speak, and then at that point they put surveillance on. It's hard to say what the original source is. But, of course, what they're trying to say here on this dragnet stuff here is that we don't need warrants. We're just going to dragnet all the communications all over America, and we're going to pop up these terrorists in that manner, and I just don't know if that really is going to fly.
Well, I'm not sure either, Roger. I just know the size and the seriousness of the threat, and I'm convinced, Roger, that if we don't stay up with them, they're going to get us, and they're going to get us with a biological weapon or a nuclear weapon or whatever they can get their hands on, because they all they want to do is kill us, Roger. I don't know how you battle somebody like that. Yeah. Without taking extraordinary measures.
Well,
I just don't
know. It's my view that we should never have gotten involved with these people because, the history of the Middle East is that they are warring tribes, warring lords. They, for 10,000 years in that area, basically what they do is they raid one another, and, it's that kind of feudal warring society. They don't go to work every day and punch time clocks, and they don't...
No, they don't.
And so... their attitude over there is, we're going to be warring anyway, and send your army over and come on over. We're going to be fighting anyway. You might as well, just come on over and fight with us as well. So,
well, Roger, I think what the Islamic terrorists are telling us, and they did tell us this very recently, was either convert or die. Now that's pretty clear. How do you feel about conversion to Islam?
I don't know that they really have that Hitler take over the world kind of attitude, but I do know that we've gone over there for I don't know how many decades now and have been and attempting to
Roger, they do have that attitude.
Well,
there's been on the videotapes that have been released and played again and again. They absolutely have that attitude.
Yeah. Okay, well, my view of it is that the world can't live in peaceful coexistence. But the point is that you got to let you got to let the people in those regions make their own political decisions, and you can't interfere with it. It's like going out in the woods and you see a bee's nest, and you go take a stick and you start beating on the bee's nest. The net result is that you're going to get the heck stung out of you.
Well, in the U.S., we separate government and religion, or at least we try to. Their government is their religion. Their religion is their government.
Yeah, I know, and I don't think we're going to have much success in installing a democracy over there. So far, it's not been too good. So, I don't know. At $3 billion a day, I think we really need to focus on New Orleans and some of these other cities and our infrastructure and our roads and our bridges and our education system and all these other things. I mean, we're busy rebuilding Iraq, but, you know, I just covered 12,000 miles in the past 3 months on assignments in America, and I can tell you the roads in America and the bridges are not good.
They can use work. There's no question about it, Roger. You're right. They're in pretty poor shape compared to the way they were years ago. No question. Infrastructure is kind of rotting away, huh?
Yeah. So, you know, I don't really think that $3 billion needs to go over there every day. Mm. And, of course, losing the kids is another shame. You know, and that's, to me, that's another thing.
Losing people is always a shame. But, you know, we are fighting for a reason. Now, I was certainly against the Iraq War prior to our going in, but we are there now. And so I kind of feel that we have to win it, Roger.
Well, do you think that American young people will strap dynamite on themselves and go blow themselves up for the cause?
No.
I don't either. So I don't.
No, I don't. But clearly, those who want us dead will do it.
Well, I understand that, but I'm saying that's why we can't win over there. That we don't have that level of commitment.
Well, actually, Roger, you talked a little while ago about democracy and that we can't install it. I don't know that we can or we can't, but clearly democracy has taken hold pretty well around the world. Now, there are areas where it has not, but those are getting smaller and smaller. Even Russia gave up the ghost, you know, and right?
Well, I think capitalism has installed itself, especially in China. You know, when you look at it's interesting, you know, I had somebody tell me the other day that in 1950s and 60s, when you and I were growing up, that 80% of the gross economy was manufacturing in America, and about 20% was financial services. And now, this many years later, the economy is 80% financial services and 20% manufacturing. Mm-hmm. And what that means is that we are selling each other insurance and we're selling each other loans, but none of which is value-added manufacturing.
You know what, though, Roger? Political change tends to follow economic change. Now, you mentioned China. It's a pretty good example. You're right. Capitalism is beginning to take hold in China, and I think that given enough time, political change will follow. And eventually, the older leaders in China will die, and we'll get some form of democracy in China. What do you think?
Well, I think they already worship in the money. I mean, you look at these trade deficits. They are in control, and they are holding a lot of the U.S. debt. The U.S. debt is really an underlying problem. You know, we always think that we got to worry about people coming over and invading us on an army kind of basis. But, you know, if in fact 40% of this national debt that we've got is being held by foreign investors, and a great deal of it I know is being held by the Arabs and a lot of the oil-rich nations are holding this debt, and the Japanese are holding the debt.
And yeah, it tends to shift around. Years ago, it was the Japanese, and now I suppose to some degree it's China and those who have the oil, because that's where the money is. That's
so,
all true.
You know, it becomes, how do you stay sovereign if you are an indebted nation?
We've kind of moved off the point of the discussion here a little bit, which was data, if you will, data mining and our privacy. And so I don't completely disagree with you on the danger of having a lot of national debt. I'm certainly not in favor of that. But what I am saying is that if you look at, and China is a perfect example, I think that eventually their political system is going to follow and change as their economic system is now rapidly changing.
Yeah, I think you might be right about that.
So the overall point is that democracy has got a pretty good foothold in the world right now, and those countries that are not democracies are the exception now in the world. Certainly, clearly the exception and not the rule. Roger Tulsis is my guest. We're talking, ostensibly talking about data mining and privacy and our rights and the Constitution and all of that. From Manila in the Philippines, I'm Art Bell. Yes, indeed. Here I am. There was a story a little bit earlier. Roger Tulsis is my guest. He'll be interested in this. The teen, one of the first people ever implanted with a microchip, died in Florida. Now, normally that wouldn't be a story at all, one way or the other. It was just a death. I know that sounds horrible. But this teen had a microchip implanted. He was one of the first to ever have a microchip implanted. We'll take up that topic with Roger Tulsis in a moment. Well, all right. I didn't run the. I didn't have them run the phone number bumper. But if you would like a word with Roger, Roger Tulsis, my guest, feel free to start lining up now, and we'll probably take some calls in this half-hour segment. Beginning in this half-hour segment, should be very interesting. Indeed, a teen with medical microchip dies in Florida. Here's a story, Boca Raton. I lived there. A teen engineering prodigy, who gained national attention in 2002 when he and his family received identification chip implants on live television, was killed in a motorcycle accident, authorities said. Derek Jacobs, 18, lost control of his motorcycle early Saturday, crashed into a guardrail and pole. According to the Palm Beach Sheriff's Office, he was wearing a helmet. Now, normally, obviously, a story like that would not make national news, but this young fellow had had a chip implant, and that's one of the topics we were going to cover with Roger tonight. Roger, we're finding more microchip implanted individuals.
Oh yes, we're still scanning people for microchip implants, and we are still finding some. Although I tend to think at this point that there's been a change in direction on the black ops development relating to microchips if they're implanted on a mind control or tracking basis, because we're seeing less of them than we did a few years ago. And I tend to think that what's happening is that these kind of control elements are now being more easily handled by directed energy coming off cell systems and aircraft and satellites.
Really? I don't know where to start here. Do you really think that we can actually control somebody's mind with a implanted chip?
Well, I think that there's a lot of research. If you look at the electronic harassment section of my website at bugsweeps.com,
right
on the front page, you have a little box that vibrates. It says electronic harassment. If you click on that, it'll take you to a picture of some of the biochips that are there. And some of these biochips are telemetry chips, where they implant them and they can do several things. They can send information about what's going on inside your body out.
Oh, sure.
To a monitoring system, or they can implant chips that can actually affect the inside of your body by sending telemetry to the chip in order to make changes.
Well, oh, absolutely. I mean, for medical reasons, for example, I know they can put a microchip in that monitors, let's say, your heartbeat. And if something goes radically wrong, the medical authorities are notified and they come get you because you're in big trouble, that kind of thing. But what I was asking about is, actual mind control. I'm not aware that we've really achieved that with microchips yet.
Yeah, I'm in agreement with that. I don't think that you're going to have mind control per se from an installed chip. Most of the mind control clients that we deal with are receiving problems through directed energy, be it microwave other kinds of different electromagnetic field energy.
Okay, well, you mentioned cell phone radiation. I'm not sure how that controls our minds. How does that work?
Well, as an example, it was interesting. One of the shows that I did with George Norrie, after we had talked about some of the clients that we have that have had mental problems relating to being hit with directed energy, he was talking about his young daughter, which was this young lady about 8 or 9, who had pressed the parent to buy her a cell phone. And she was a well-behaved young lady and had good grades and was cooperative at school. And then, so the father buys her this cell phone because all her friends have one, and that she said, you know, as a safety issue. So she gets the cell phone, and within about a week or two, because she's on at night with her friends because it's after 9 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. you can talk as much as you want. She's got the cell phone up to her head. Her behavior starts to deteriorate at school, where she's becoming rowdy, attention deficit. She's fighting with people. Her grades plummet over the next few weeks, and she becomes this. Her whole demeanor, rather than being a conscientious young person, ends up being this rowdy, disruptive kind of person.
Cell phone madness, huh?
So as the father, as a punishment, takes the cell phone away. Uh-huh. And in a matter of a couple of weeks, her personality goes back to this rather calm, fastidious, serious about her work, able to concentrate, no longer aggressive. And he, when he wrote me the email, he said, you know, this follows directly what you were saying about how brain functions can be interfered with by microwaves in terms of the electrical operation. So that's just one example, and that came from your radio show. It was a listener that contacted me with this story.
No, I don't buy it.
You don't think
that? Now, I would, well, it's anecdotal at best, Roger. And secondly, there's no real evidence to show yet that there's harmful radiation that that comes from cell phones, particularly that would do that. I'd be more inclined to believe that the nature of her conversations or whatever it was she was talking about on the cell phone was bothering her, as opposed to the actual radiation from the cell phone.
Well, this is a behavioral change. And I do have a research paper that I would have to pull out for you that where they had done studies about the safe levels of microwave radiation. And originally those levels were set by the military relating to thermal heating. In other words, if the power levels were such that it heated up portions of the body to unacceptable levels, or if it affected your eyes relating to the cataract problems.
Absolutely.
And what happened is they did this other research that started to focus on when do you start to interfere with neural processing.
Mm-hmm.
And what they found was that the radiation levels, if you base it on neural interference, should be set so much lower than on the thermal basis relating to heat ups and cataracts. I do have that document, and I can provide it to you by email or by Uber.
Well, I'm certainly aware, Roger, that directed radiation, for example, from the installation in Alaska is a good example, mm-hmm. Might indeed have an effect on people's personalities and that sort of thing. But the radiation from a cell phone, I think, in the anecdotal situation you gave us, I would be disinclined to believe that that was the case. I mean, you can throw it out there and people can consider it, but I don't know. Cell phone madness, I don't know.
Yeah, well, we just got finished dealing with another young lady that lives directly across the street from three cell towers, and she's been on a steady decline of health and mental health since she moved into this location. She was unaware of that kind of problem, and she, you know, it's a stone's throw. She's on a second floor looking out on these towers, and corresponding with her move-in, and ever since, she's been having both physical and mental difficulties. And what we did for her is that we did two things. We, because she was unable to move out, we made a 10-foot by 10-foot tent enclosure using shielding materials. We use a metallized fabric that will attenuate by about 80% most of those transmitted energies in those bands.
Mm-hmm.
And she's had improvement in that. The other thing that we use is we use an electrostatic field system where we use thermal blankets, which are conductive on one side, they're mylar on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll put those blankets on wall areas, and we'll hook those up to a high voltage DC supply at about 7,500 volts. And
isn't that more likely to do damage to you than anything coming from a cell phone tower?
Well, actually, it's a DC bias. You have to look at it as a bias, and what it does is it offsets these incoming waves that are, if you study the microwave, if you look at my website, there are documents on there that has to do with microwave hearing and all these experiments that were done to transmit voices into people's heads and buzzing sounds and anything else you can actually cause people to hear by transmitting microwaves if they're pulsed in the proper format. The government's been doing a tremendous amount of research on this, and I do have clients that regularly have problems with hearing voices and transmissions, and they're in the format of downloads where this information keeps repeating themselves.
I see. All right, let's pick up a few phone calls and see what the audience has to say. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Roger Tulsis and Art Bell. Hi.
Hi. Excuse me. Besides wanting to talk about a news item that pertains to all of this that I heard about a week ago on the radio, could I ask Roger, other than a Gauss meter, and I don't even know how to use a Gauss meter properly, is there any way to tell whether one is being bombarded in any way?
Well, your physical effects, there's a long list of physical effects that we can list here.
But there isn't any kind of a meter?
Well, the Gauss meters will be good up to 400 hertz. So they're for electromagnetic fields from about DC up to 400 hertz. That's not much of the spectrum when you consider that your microwave energy can be anywhere from 600 megahertz out to anywhere towards 40 gigahertz. So you would need some kind of microwave meter, and there's one called the Tri-Field that covers quite a few of the ranges you can try. But, you know, the thing about these things is that's about $75 worth of parts, and when we go do investigations, we use a $40,000 machine.
Right.
And so the accuracy levels that we're able to interpret and analyze, it's so much more in resolution that we can put our fingers on the problem so much more.
Okay, but Roger, you can get a field strength meter that will look at any high-level radiation right up through microwave if you really want one.
Well, if it's a field strength meter, you're gulping the whole spectrum simultaneously.
Well, that's right.
And then you never really know what part of the spectrum, and they are very susceptible to structural you know, if you have metal in the structure, a lot of times you've got these frequency resonances where the structure itself will re-emit. That's the other thing about people that have these kind of problems. The first thing we do is we get them off mattresses that have springs in them. Because, you know, if you're laying on a mattress that has springs that are all tied together by metal ties, it's like laying on an antenna that would be the size of a battleship antenna.
Well, I suppose. I mean, that presumes, though, that you have an extremely high-level source of RF, in your rather immediate area.
Well, the thing about it is that for people that have electrical hypersensitivity, they only have to lay on something that can regenerate of that size and amplify it up just by the metal there. And the interesting thing is I approached one of the mattress manufacturers, and I said, do you guys ever figure out the resonance? And the guy sent me back this gigantic paper on the formulas of resonance of the inner core of the...
On the mattresses, really?
That's right. They actually
had out of curiosity, Roger, where did they turn out becoming resonant?
Oh, you know, I don't remember. It's been such a long time. I'd have to go back and look at the paper. But there was a tremendous amplification factor when you consider that the size of the bed. It was considerable. And if you're that proximity to the source, like laying right on it, it could be a substantial problem.
Okay. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Roger Tulsis and Art Bell. Hi.
How you doing, Roger and Art?
Yeah, just fine, sir.
I have some points to make here, and I like your opinion, especially Roger's and yours, Art. During World War II, the Navajo Code Talkers, they spoke over open lines, and everybody knew that everybody was listening, especially the Japanese. And certain things that they could talk about, for instance, they called tanks turtles. And they had a different, you know, they used basically animal names for different battleships or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure Al-Qaeda knows, you know, about this program as much as we do. And they're not going to, you know, chances are they're not going to get on there and say, we're going to blow this up at a certain time, at a certain date. You know, it'd be more like, hey, let's have coffee and, you know, I'll have my own extra sugar. You know what I'm saying? I'm sure they can talk over open phone lines. And in the meantime, the only people that are getting affected by this is the average American being snooped on. Now, another point, World War II again. Does the phrase "John has a long mustache" mean anything? Look at how many codes were sent to the French Resistance over open lines. But then again, you know, nobody knew what it meant. You know, it was only intended for certain people, and they knew that meant go.
So what you're saying is if they would use simple phrases like that, they couldn't be detected anyway.
Right. Now, Mark, before, when Roger asked about all those questions and how you wouldn't mind, let me pose this to you. Now, a lot of your...
Okay, you've got a telephone that's not working too well there. Are you on a portable or something?
How's that better?
Yeah, it's better.
I wiggled the wire. Now, how about this, Art? Say, with all your different shows, and you are interested in UFOs, say you had an informant that would call you up and say, okay, I worked at Area 51, I can prove this, and I'm willing to spill the beans.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if they're tapping your phone lines, and that keyword happens to be in their computer and grabs it before you get to him, now, would that be right?
I have always assumed that my phones are tapped.
Well, but you see what I'm saying.
Well, I do. I just for the record, I've always assumed they're tapped.
Well, you know,
because of the nature of the kind of thing that I talk about, I've just always made that assumption.
Well, you know, I assume the same thing. You know, I always have, actually, today, especially since I've heard about this program many years ago. But it comes down to, you know, Al-Qaeda knows it's out there, too. And the end result is, the chances are, you know, which I don't put a lot of faith in their intelligence, but I do think that, you know, they're not stupid enough to say things over open lines. In the meantime, they're not being heard, but we are. And anything being heard will be, you know, wrote down. For instance, a lot of people call your show and, you know, have different government ideas as far as they trust this or they're, you know, against that. Mm-hmm. Do you think that would be wrote down?
I don't
think it would be.
I would. Well, maybe it would be. I have no way of knowing. There are guidelines. What we really should be debating is, it seems to me, the oversight of all of this. Not whether or not it should be done, because I think it should be done. But again, the oversight. Because, as Roger pointed out, it's the abuse of this that we have to be concerned with. Right, Roger?
Well, the thing about it is, and I said this before, I think that the invasion and the power of the ability to monitor us is directly proportioned to the sophistication of the chips that are being developed. The more sophisticated the chips, the more surveillance, the power of the surveillance goes up. So as these chips become more and more exponentially powerful, we're going to see a shrinking amount of privacy based just on that raw horsepower of the chips themselves.
Hmm. So it's the power of the chip, huh?
Well, just think about it for a second. How could they possibly have done something like data mine all the called phone numbers in America for the past 3 years, 15 years ago?
Good point. Wildcard Line, you're on the air with Roger Tulsis and Art Bell. Hi.
Good morning, good evening, morning, whatever, gentlemen.
Yes.
You guys have brought up some of the very reasons tonight. I can bring up another one. This is about the NSA net, the NSA monitoring information. It's very easy to disrupt, and it's very easy to bypass. You guys have brought up these exact points. The logical conclusion is that it's not intended for terrorists. It never was. You're just given a reason to agree to it, a reason to give up rights to say okay to the system. It's obvious it's not made for terrorists, because anyone high level enough, let me give you an example. You get enough people mad right now that don't want it on the side of the people that don't want it. Sure, to get a million people to say the catchphrases on their phones the same day. Shut it down quick. So that's the whole thing. It's easy to shut down. It's easy to bypass. Therefore, it's not made for high-level terrorists.
It's funny. I used to joke about that. I used to say, why doesn't everybody get together and say bomb or nuclear or something like that, right in the middle of a phone conversation? I used to joke about that, but you may notice I don't joke about that anymore, because I'm not interested in screwing up their ability to intercept something that might mean life or death for a lot of Americans. Roger?
Yeah, I agree with him. I think it was not made for the terrorists. It's basically the ability to have huge databases on the citizens.
Okay, Roger, hold tight. We're at the top of the hour, and when we come back, we'll concentrate heavily on the phone lines. Roger Tolsis is my guest. We're discussing advisability of doing what is, well, being debated and actually done right now with regard to listening to all of us. I'm Art Bell.